The term Mechirat Yosef means the sale of Yosef. That's the title that we give to the story told in Parashas Vayeshev, Perek Lamed Zayin, through pretty much the end of Sefer Bereishis. And Rashi starts off or introduces the story by talking about different ways that Yaakov Avinu and Yosef HaTzadik were similar. Rashi points out that Yaakov and Yosef both had brothers who hated them. Yaakov's brother Esav hated him. Yosef's brothers, the other Shvatim, hated him. Not only that, Rashi says, there's a second similarity, which is that Yaakov's older brother tried to kill him. Esav tried to kill Yaakov. And Yosef's older brothers tried to kill him. They threw him in the pit with the snakes and the scorpions. And it's an interesting thing that in Halacha, we find that there are similarities between Yaakov and Yosef as well. For example, on Sukkos, when we list the seven ushpizin, one ushpiz per night, we list Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, right? Moshe, Aaron, and David. None of the other Shvatim make it onto the list of ushpizin. The only one who's up there with Yaakov is Yosef. Another interesting similarity. This is the fourth one. Yaakov's children got a portion in the land of Israel. Yosef's children, Ephraim and Manasseh, got portions in the land of Israel. None of Yosef's brothers got portions in Israel that way. Their children didn't get portions. Only they got portions. Yaakov and Yosef were the only ones whose children had portions in Eretz Yisrael. I think there's actually a connection, a cause and effect connection between these similarities. Of all of the Shvatim, Yosef had the hardest life. He had the most challenges to deal with. He had the most suffering, the most discomfort. And in spite of that, he remained a tzaddik, just like Yaakov Avinu. And really, that's what we mean when we say pressure builds mountains, pressure makes diamonds. Sometimes, the more that a person has challenged, the greater they become. Yosef experienced more challenges than his other brothers, and so he was greater and ended up receiving more blessing and privileges than the brothers received. The pasuk tells us how old Yosef was when this story of Mechira Yosef began, and it says that Yosef was 17 years old, ben 17 shana. And the pasuk also tells us v'hu na'ar, he was a na'ar. What does a na'ar mean? It means a young person, a kid. But there's a machlokas about what the Torah is trying to teach us about Yosef when it calls him a na'ar. Rashi says that na'ar means that he would play with his hair, he was very into looks. Like little kids sometimes are into looks, even though when they grow up, they become into other things. But Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that the meaning of na'ar, or the lesson of na'ar, is something different. When a young child looks at the world, he feels that anything is possible. He can make the world, he can make it a perfect place. Just earlier today, someone was telling me, yeah, a kid, a teenager, he says, I think that we can solve the problem, all of the suffering of the immigrants and want-to-be immigrants and illegal immigrants. We can take care of them. We have it in our power to solve all of their problems. And I, being a little bit older, maybe was a little bit skeptical of that. But that's the beauty of being young, is that you really have this drive, energy, enthusiasm, excitement, ambition to totally change the world for the better. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that's what the Torah is teaching us, that Yosef had that enthusiasm. He was young at heart. Sometimes you'll meet an old person and say he's young at heart because he still has the enthusiasm and the optimism. And that's, according to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, what the word na'ar means. Now, it's an interesting thing. If you think about the whole story of Mechirat Yosef, the way that you heard it in Parsha class in elementary school, What are some of the most basic lessons that the Torah is trying to teach us? Without getting into all the details, what are some of the basic lessons of the story? So I would say that one of the basic lessons of the story is how dangerous it is to hate somebody else. Because the brothers, Yosef's brothers, hated him. And look what happened. Right? Look what it brought them to. Look what suffering it caused Yosef to go through. It's a lesson about how dangerous hatred is. Not just that. All the way at the beginning. Like what was one of the first things that Yosef did? The Pasuk says, Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el aviyem, that Yosef brought Lashon Hara about his brothers to their father. The power of Lashon Hara to destroy the life of the person who tells it and the lives of the people about whom it's told and the life of the person who listens. Yaakov, Yosef, and the Shvatim were all hurt terribly by the Lashon Hara that Yosef told about his brothers. And it's an interesting thing because the Gemara tells us that two sins really caused us to be exiled from Israel in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash and the times of the second Beis HaMikdash. And those sins were hatred and Lashon Hara. And it's so interesting that in the story of Yosef, which ended with the entire Jewish family being exiled from Israel to Egypt and going down to Egypt, what happened at the beginning of the story that caused this exile? It was Lashon Hara that Yosef told about his brothers, Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'ah, and it was the hatred that the brothers hated him, Vayisne'u oto. What exactly is Lashon Hara? Well, in the words of the Torah calls it dibatam ra'ah, dibasam ra'ah, that Yosef brought Lashon Hara about his brothers. But Lashon Hara really means two different things. One of the things that Lashon Hara means is speech that hurts. If I say something that hurts your feelings, it's Lashon Hara. If I say something that hurts you financially, that makes you lose money, it's Lashon Hara. If I say something that makes you lose friends, it's Lashon Hara. If I say something that makes you lose an opportunity, a shidduch opportunity, a business opportunity, it's Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, the first definition, is speech that harms, speech that hurts. But there's a second definition as well. Even if nobody gets hurt from the Lashon Hara, it still could be Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara has a second definition, and that is speech that spreads negativity. I can look at the glass as half full, and I can look at the glass as half empty. But if I look at it as half full, I'll be happy having gotten it. While if I look at it as half empty, then the present will only make me sad. And so if I was looking at the glass as half full, and you came along and said, ha, your glass is half empty, suddenly I'm no longer happy with my life and with what I have. And any speech that spreads negativity is also a type of Lashon Hara. Now the Gemara tells us that Lashon Hara harms three parties. And those are the speaker, let's say in this case it would have been Yosef, the listener, that would be Yaakov Avinu, and the person who was spoken about, that would be the Shvatim. How does Lashon Hara harm each party? So it's very easy to understand how Yosef's brothers were harmed by the Lashon Hara, because their father might have not been as nice to them, or perhaps he wouldn't have trusted them as much. It hurt them. It took away opportunities from them for independence, for advancement. But how were Yosef and Yaakov harmed by the Lashon Hara? How are the speaker and the listener harmed? So at the most basic level, before you even talk about rebounds and boomerangs, at the most basic level, when a person hears Lashon Hara, it makes them look at life in a more negative way. You could look at the world as a great, amazing, happy, cheerful, wonderful place. You could also look at the world as a dark and gloomy and depressing place. And Lashon Hara is speech that spreads negativity. When a person hears bad things about the world around them, about the people around them, it transforms them from being a happy, satisfied person into being a cynical, skeptical, dissatisfied person. And so even if they're not actually losing out on something as a result of the Lashon Hara, they're losing out on a positive outlook on life. they're losing out on the happiness that a positive outlook brings, and so it harms the listener. And of course, the speaker also. If I just think negative, cynical thoughts, that's one thing. If I talk about them, it makes it much harder to uproot that cynical, negative outlook on life. And so the speaker also, by strengthening and reinforcing his negativity, also is harmed by the Lashon Hara. And the pasuk goes on and tells us that Yaakov gave a gift to Yosef. In Hebrew, it's called a ksones pasim. Maybe it means a colorful coat. Maybe it means a coat that was made out of fancy material. And people tend to make the mistake, and they think that Yosef's brothers, the Shvatim, were jealous of him because of that coat. But that's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, "Vayiru echav," his brothers saw, "ki oto ahav avihem yikol echav," that their father loved him more than all his brothers, and therefore they hated him. It wasn't the coat, it was their father's love that they were jealous of, that their father Yaakov Avinu loved Yosef more than he loved all of the brothers. And there's actually two very important lessons that the Gemara and the Ramban get from this pasuk. The Gemara says it's important not to love one child more than all the other children. Not important not to have one favorite student more than all the other students. And so when people ask me, "Rabbi, who's your favorite student?" I say, all my students are my favorite student. Which of your children is your favorite child? All of my children are my favorite child. That's the lesson that we learn from this story, that we see the terrible consequences of what happened because Yaakov made it clear that Yosef was his favorite child more than all the others. And so the Gemara tells us that we're supposed to learn from here that all of our children have to be our favorite child, and that a person should never single out one child to get more love than the other ones. The Ramban has a slightly different lesson that he derives from this story, and particularly from the fact that Yaakov's love for Yosef made the Shvatim hate him. The Ramban says that we tend to think that love is always good, and that the more love we show, the better that life will be. He says, love is always powerful, but love is not always good. Just because I love someone doesn't mean I have to kiss her. After you marry her, you can kiss her. Beforehand, it's not a safe thing to show your love in that way. Love needs to be channeled, it needs to be controlled, it needs to be restrained. Because if a person just says, I love, therefore I will show my love, it can lead to very, very dangerous consequences. Yaakov Avinu said, how can it be? It's not right. I love Yosef so much. Should I hold back some of that love? Should I not let him see how much I love him? But if Yaakov had held back some of that love, then he, perhaps the jealousy and the hatred that the Shvatim had for Yosef would never have, gotten to the point that it got to. The pasuk continues and talks about the first dream that Yosef had, and he and his brothers were bundling wheat in the field, and Yosef's bundle stood up. All the brothers' bundles surrounded his bundle and bowed down to his bundle. And Yosef tells this dream to his brothers. And the Aruch Chaim asks the question, and he says, that was dumb. Like, didn't he realize that his brothers were already hating him? Did he think that they would love him more when he told them about this dream? He should have realized that the dream would have made them hate him more, as they actually did. It says, Vayosifu od sno so, that they added on to their hatred of him. So why did Yosef share this dream with his brothers? Now the Sefarno says, okay, that's what it means at the beginning of the parsha, v'hu nar. When you're young, you don't always realize everything about life. And as you get older and you have more experience and you learn more from your own life and from the lives of people who came before you, you become wiser and you make better decisions. So the Sefarno says, okay, he still had to learn something and he didn't realize that this would be the consequence. But the Aruch Chaim gives a different answer, very interesting answer. And he says that Yosef actually was sharing the dream with his brothers as a way of sort of trying to make up with them. He realized that they hated him, and he didn't want it to be that way between them. He wanted to bring back the love. And so he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to share something with them that's very personal. I'm going to share something with them that they could potentially use to hurt me. And that's going to be a show of how much I trust them and how much I want them to love me again. And so very often when we share something that's a vulnerability of ours, that's a way of showing someone that I trust you. You would only share that with a close friend, with someone that you know loves you or someone that you hope loves you. And so Yosef was thinking, I have this dream, and I know that they could make fun of me because of this dream, but I'm going to share it with them anyhow, just to show them how much I want them to love me. I'm literally going to like throw myself open for them to stab me because I just so want them to say, look, he's poor Yosef, he's so vulnerable, and now we'll love him again. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, and they did, you know, stab him, figuratively speaking. And, you know, that's what they reacted. They said, Ahamaloch timloch alinu, you? You're going to be a king? You don't have what it takes to be a king. You're not going to be the king over us. In mashol timshol banu, we're going to respect you for your leadership qualities. Yeah, you'll never make it there. Vayusifu otsnooto, and then they added on to their hatred for him. So it backfired. But, you know, the Aruch Chaim says that it was really like, it was his olive branch. He was trying to, trying to get them to love him again. And this brings us to the question, why does the Torah write about the sins of tzaddikim, unlike other religions, which only talk about the miracles that their, you know, heroes performed? Most of the Torah is not about the miracles and the, you know, great mitzvos that the heroes of our history performed, but rather the opposite. It's taken for granted that Yosef had tzaddik, and that the Shvatim, and that the Avos, and that Moshe Rabbeinu, and Aaron HaKohen, and Eliyahu HaNavi, and David HaMelech, it's taken for granted that these people were great tzaddikim, who loved Hashem, and who Hashem loved them back. But the Torah doesn't focus on the miracles and the mitzvos that they did, but rather the Torah focuses very often on the small mistakes, the one mistake they may have made in their entire lifetime. And the question is why? Why does the Torah write so much about the sins of tzaddikim? And, there's a couple of lessons that we can get from this. One of the lessons, of course, is that we're supposed to learn from their mistakes and not repeat it. So Yosef, you know, he thought that the best way to make up with his brothers was to share with them something that made him vulnerable. Perhaps, you know, we should think twice before we try that with someone in our own life. Another possible answer is that the Torah is trying to teach us that even if we make a mistake, we can recover from that and still be a great tzaddik. Yosef, when he was 17, he was a nar. He was too into his looks. He may have made some misjudgments, but that didn't stop him from eventually becoming Yosef HaTzaddik. And so no matter what mistakes we made when we were young or when we still are young, that shouldn't prevent us from growing up to be a great tzaddik. Just like Yosef HaTzaddik might have made mistakes, just like all the other tzaddikim in our history, and that didn't stop them from being so close to Hashem and such great heroes of Jewish history. How did the Shvatim interpret the meaning of Yosef's dreams? They thought that it meant that Yosef believed that he was going to rule over them. What did the Shvatim say to Yosef when he told them his dreams? They said, Hamaloch timloch alinu imashol timshol banu. You're going to rule over us. You're going to command our respect. Yeah. Nah. You? Nah. Halachically, what are two differences between a dream and a prophecy? So we know that if a person has a dream where God appears to them and says, go murder someone or go rob a bank, if it's a dream, they're not supposed to listen to that instruction. You're not allowed to do an Aveira just because you dreamed that God told you to do it. But if it's a real prophecy, if it's a real nevuah, and Hashem tells you something in a prophecy, then you need to do it, even if it's against what the Torah ordinarily instructs us to do. Second, is that a dream you don't have to share with anybody. You can keep the dream to yourself. Prophecies must be shared with their audience. You're not allowed to hold the prophecy and to keep it to yourself. Now, the Ramban makes the argument that Yosef believed that his dreams were prophecies, not regular dreams. How does Ramban understand that? Because for all of the years that Yosef was in Egypt, not just the years that he was a slave and not just the years that he was in jail, but even the years that he was in charge of Potiphar's estate and even the years that he was second in command and viceroy to the king, he never sent the letter to Yaakov Avinu saying, hi, Dad, I'm fine. I'm here in Egypt. I'm the viceroy. He was totally silent. And he never let Yaakov Avinu know that he was alive, even though Yaakov Avinu was in great distress, thinking that Yosef was dead. Why? Doesn't the mitzvah of kibud avaim, the mitzvah of respecting parents, obligate the child to take his parent out of distress? How could Yosef have neglected the mitzvah of respecting Yaakov Avinu? The Ramban says the only answer that he can think of is that Yosef thought that he was instructed by this prophecy to make sure that his father and mother and brothers would bow to him. And he believed that if he told Yaakov Avinu that he was alive, the prophecy would never be fulfilled. And that's why he felt that he had justification not to let his father know he was alive. He felt that he was commanded through a prophecy to break the mitzvah of kibud av va'im in order to ensure that the prophecy came true. And that might also answer the Aruch Chaim's question, why did Yosef tell the dreams to his brothers? If they were just dreams, he's allowed to keep them to himself. But a prophecy must be shared. And so Yosef, even though he knew, oh my gosh, this is scary, they might kill me because of this, but a prophecy has to be shared no matter what. And so he shared the prophecy, even though he knew what the consequences might be. What was Yosef's second dream? He dreamed that the sun and the moon and 11 stars were all bowing down to him. Now the sun in the dream symbolized Yaakov Avinu, the moon symbolized Yosef's mother, Rachel Imenu, and the stars symbolized the Shvatim. And that's why when Yosef describes a dream, he says, Hashemesh, the sun, Vayareach, and the moon, Vayacharasar Kochavim, Kochavim mean the stars, are bowing down to me. Yaakov Avinu immediately gets it and says, Havo Navo, will we come? Ani, I, the sun represents me, Ve'imecha, and your mother, the moon represents your mother, Ve'achecha, and your brothers, the stars represent your brothers, Leishtachavo Lecha Arza, to bow down to you to the ground. And therefore, because Yaakov Avinu heard this dream, it says, Vayigar Bo Aviv, that Yaakov Avinu yelled at Yosef, he scolded him, he rebuked him. This is very funny. Why did Yaakov Avinu rebuke Yosef for the dreams? Usually when a visionary shares a dream with you and he says, I'm going to bring world peace. I'm going to cure all disease. I'm going to be a billionaire and give out millions of dollars to tzedakah. You're not supposed to yell at them or rebuke them or tell them that they can't do it. You're supposed to say, go for it. You can do it. I say, you have it in you. If someone wants to do something great, encourage them. Why is Yaakov discouraging Yosef? Why is he yelling at him? Why is he rebuking him? So Rashi explains that Yaakov is giving this message to Yosef. Yaakov didn't believe that these dreams were prophecies. He didn't believe that the dreams needed to be shared. So he said to Yosef, why are you saying something that makes other people jealous of you? It's like two kids both get a piece of cake. One of them says, my piece is bigger. The other one immediately says, no, my piece is bigger. And now both of them are dissatisfied and fighting because of those pieces of cake. If the first one had just kept his mouth shut and just said to himself, I'm so happy I got the biggest piece of cake, then he would have been happier and the other guy would be happier. So Yaakov Avinu is saying to Yosef, why are you sharing these dreams with your brothers? It's just going to make them hate you more. Keep it to yourself. And maybe if the brothers see that I'm rebuking you and yelling at you, maybe they're not going to hate you as much for sharing these dreams with them. But the fact is that in the end of the day, the brothers were jealous of Yosef. It says, Vayikanu vo'echav, that his brothers had kinna, his brothers had jealousy of him. And again, one of the important lessons, like we said about sinas kinam, about the dangers of hatred, is also a lesson about the dangers of jealousy. Usually we think that the opposite of love is hatred, but the Ramban says it's not true. The opposite of love is jealousy. Jealousy and love are opposites. When the Pasuk says, Ve'ahavta l're'acha kamocha, love your friend like you love yourself, the Ramban says, what does that mean? It means that when good things happen to your friend, you should be happy. You shouldn't be jealous. If you're jealous of them, you're lacking in love. If you really love them, you're not going to be jealous when good things happen to them. And that's one of the things that we can do to deal with jealousy, to remember, do I really love him? If I really love him, I'm not going to be jealous of him. There's some other things also, like I mentioned, if your team is down 2 points and it's 5 seconds to the buzzer, and somebody shoots a three-pointer, you're not jealous of him. How come he got the three-pointer and not me? You're happy because now the team won. And if we really perceive all of us, all the Jewish people, as being on the same team, we're not going to be jealous that one person has a better device or a bigger house, right, or more money, right, than the other one. He has what he needs to advance the team and to help the team win and score. We have what we need to advance the team. Just because he's the one who got the three-pointer and not me is not going to make me jealous, because we really are all on the same team. We mentioned the story that when I was very, very little, and I was walking by a beautiful mansion with beautiful gardens, and I thought to myself, wow, wouldn't I love to live there? And then my friend, whose house I was sleeping over at, noticed I was looking, and he said, would you like to know who lives in that house? And I said, sure. And he said, there's 10 families that couldn't afford to pay rent, and they were kicked out of their apartment. And the community got together and bought this house for them, and now there's 10 families living all together in that house. Because they can't afford, they have no place else to go. And I said to myself, Baruch Hashem, that I kept my mouth shut. And the point is, the grass always looks greener on the other side, but very often, what looks like the dream life is not really the dream life. What looks like something that we would love to have, if we had it, we probably wouldn't love it. And that's a great way also to deal with jealousy, is to remember the grass always looks greener on the other side, and it probably isn't as good as it looks, whatever it is that we're thinking about. It probably comes, right? It probably has a price, not necessarily a price that we'd be happy to pay. Anyhow, Rabbi Yonah says that there's three different types of jealousy. All of them are bad. The first type is to say, if I can't have it, I don't want anyone to have it. That's the worst type of jealousy. It's totally destructive. I don't end up with it, and the other guy doesn't end up with it also. I'm wishing that no one should have it, that something good should be destroyed from the world. It's a terrible, destructive type of jealousy. The second type of jealousy is also bad. It's just not as bad as the first type, and that's saying, I don't want him to have it. I want to have it. I want to have it instead of him. That's a second type of jealousy. It's also not a good type of jealousy, but it's not as bad as the first type of jealousy, because it's partially constructive. It's not wishing that something good should be destroyed from the world. It's only that it should be destroyed from the other guy and that I should have it instead. And finally, the third type of jealousy, which is also bad, but not as bad as the first two, is saying, I don't care if he keeps it. I just want to have it also. That's also a bad type of jealousy, because person can never be happy if all he's focused on is what he doesn't have. Person can't be happy if all he's focused on are the things that other people have, but he doesn't. And so these types of jealousy, all three of them, really make a person's happiness impossible. They make a person's life miserable. They make it impossible for a person to focus on what he does have and what he should be happy for, and all he can focus on is how miserable he is because of the things that he doesn't have. There's only one good type of jealousy, Rabbeinu Yonah says, and that's jealousy of somebody else's Torah and somebody else's mitzvot, somebody else's good deeds. And that's what we mean when we say kinat sofrim tar bechachma. When students are jealous of one another's knowledge, then everyone becomes more smart. Because if I am jealous of your knowledge, then I'm going to study harder and I'm going to read more and I'm going to become smart also. And wisdom will increase in the world. And that's the only type of jealousy, Rabbeinu Yonah says, which is a good type of jealousy. The other types of jealousy are all destructive. The Aruch HaTzadikim tells a story to emphasize how harmful jealousy is. He says, once upon a time, there were two enemies who were jealous of one another. And every time that one of those enemies got something, the other one would eat his face out. Oh my God, he has it and I don't. And Shlomo HaMelech decided to take upon himself to cure their jealousy, to make the jealousy end. So he invited one of these two people to his palace and he said, I'll give you anything, anything that's in my ability to give you, anything that you wish for, on condition that your enemy gets twice as much. The person thought to himself, I can wish for a lot of money, but that won't make me happy because my enemy will have twice as much. I can wish for a lot of fame, but that won't make me happy because my enemy will have twice as much. I can wish for a lot of power, but that won't make me happy because my enemy will have twice as much. If I wish for a big house, his house will be twice as big and I'll be miserable. If I wish for a nice car, he'll have two of them and I'll be miserable. And he couldn't think of a single thing to wish for that would make him happy. So finally he said to King Shlomo, he said, I wish, King Shlomo, that you should blind one of my eyes. And of course the enemy now will have both of his eyes blinded. And so the guy, because of jealousy, lost out on the opportunity of a lifetime to wish for whatever he might have wished for. And what did he get instead? His eye got poked out. And so this is just a very clear example of how jealousy is able to destroy a person's happiness and destroy a person's life. How is it possible that the Shvatim, who were such great tzaddikim and heroes of Jewish history, were jealous of Yosef HaTzaddik? Didn't they know how terrible jealousy is and how destructive it is? So some Sfarim explain that they believed that their jealousy was not the bad type of jealousy. They believed it was the good type of jealousy. They believed it was kinat sofrim, which is increases wisdom. They believed that it was jealousy of mitzvos and of Torah. How is that possible? Well, they saw the pattern of Abraham and Yitzchak. Abraham had two sons, an older son and a younger son. The older son, Yishmael, was pushed aside. And Yitzchak was the one who was given the opportunity to continue coming close to Hashem. Yitzchak had two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Esav was the older one, Yaakov was the younger one. The older son was pushed aside, and it was only the younger son that was given the opportunity to come closer to Hashem. And they were scared that the same thing was happening, that when Yaakov loved Yosef more than them, it meant that they too were going to get pushed aside, like Yishmael and like Esav, and that only Yosef was going to get the ability to have the Torah and to do the mitzvot and to come closer to Hashem. And so they thought to themselves, wrongly, but nonetheless, they didn't see themselves as having the evil type of jealousy. They said, we're jealous of Yosef because it seems that he's going to get those opportunities for Torah, mitzvot, and closeness to Hashem. Unfortunately, though, this was a mistaken self-analysis. And again, some of the great lessons of the parsha, right, are the destructive power of jealousy, of hatred, of lashon hara, of uncontrolled love, and of showing favoritism to one, because everyone should be our favorite.